Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Tired of your old tractor crying when it sees a hill? Or coughing more than Uncle Earl in pollen season? Trade up now at Sid's Trading Company. Coyote and TYM tractors so mean, they'd plow a cornfield in reverse. Uphill. Get her did at Sid's. SidsTrading.com.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green, here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal on Super Talk Mississippi.
And good morning, Mississippi. Ken Hagman, the Birdman, filling in for Nellie this morning. It's a beautiful day outside. Carry your radio with you while you do your garden work. What a wonderful day. Lance, can you give us an idea about what's happening with the weather for the rest of the day?
I'll do my best, yes. It will, as going through it during the week, it looked to be spotty and rainy in the southern part of the state, potentially. Northeast part was going to be the prettiest, the coolest, the eastern seaboard of Mississippi.
Right.
But in the Delta, it's going to be about 90, 50% chance of showers, and it'll be partly sunny and about a heat index value cooking at about 100 degrees. So if you're going to be out, be careful and stay hydrated. Southwest winds about 10 miles an hour. And let me get us Jackson area metro real quick. And, so you never know with the summer weather, but I would say chances of showers are about half, 50-50 today. Same around the metro, 40% chance of showers, mainly late afternoon, 1 to 5 range, mostly sunny, 92 degrees. Heat index values, a little bit warmer, 103 degrees around here.
Wow.
5 to 10 mile hour breeze. So, again, through the day, potentially some rain. It will have a little breeze. It's been nice. It doesn't feel as hot as it says
no.
It is, but it is early right now.
I had a little get-together yesterday at my place, and I'm going to have you over there sometime soon. We had a few folks coming over, and it kept thundering, and I was worried that we were going to have a downfall, and it never did rain. It was nice and cool, and the wind was blowing, and a lot of noise from the thunder, but not a drop ever fell. Yeah, it was
Rankin
really
County
nice.
Got a lot of rain yesterday.
Oh, I knew it was coming down somewhere.
It was popping around, and I was in and out of about three different counties yesterday. So Rankin County seemed to be the winner if you were looking for rain. And then today, we were most of the rain that we saw in that storm, the 93TWZ or whatever they're calling these things that aren't hurricanes or traditionally tropical depressions, but we've gotten more technical and it doesn't look quite as bad with the rain that was going to dump. So even like down around Picayune and the coast, still about a 50% chance of showers today, mostly after in the afternoon again. So if you're going to get out, this is the perfect time to do
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
Like.
Sounds like everybody can get out, take their radio with them, and get out and go gardening. You can hit us up on that Super Talk app and carry your phone with you outside and listen to what's going on. We're going to talk about gardening for the birds this morning. Nellie gave me the moniker the Birdman, probably, and Lance, I honestly don't know how long we've been working together, Nellie and I. We go way back, and I know it's more than 30 years because I taught at Madison Central for 29 years, and it was while I was still teaching at other schools. So I know it's been quite a while that Nellie and I have been sharing time together and talking with each other. And goodness, we even many years ago, she and I and another gentleman by the name of Harden put together a magazine. We had a magazine that we put out every month. It was Mississippi Gardens Magazine. It was really nice.
Yeah.
Slick-looking mag.
Oh, I loved magazines back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of like I was a real big National Geographic person. My grandfather
I was as well.
Had every atlas and every map and every hardback of anything that had biblical history or especially the Middle East. But he just loved maps and topography and geography. So I grew up with a coffee table every time I'd go to my grandparents would be filled with the most amazing treasures of magazines and books. And I always migrated to the National Geographic. So when I was a young man, I don't know, 10, 11, he got a subscription for me. And I had that forever and still have a subscription. I can't tell you how many Natty Geos I have. I love those things. And then my grandmother was an artist. So it was a a feast of the senses to go over to
oh,
their
yeah.
house. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're going to talk about gardening for the birds this morning. We usually get several callers that call in with questions about what's going on in their backyard.
Well, we did have one quickly, but I had my hands full. We were literally just getting started. So whoever that was that called, I apologize. I couldn't get to you. We were getting crunk up here, and we are now ready to roll. So,
and I can't find the cursor.
You got the wrong mouse.
That would help. Paula from Denville says, good morning, Birdman and Lance. Well, good morning to you, Paula.
I guarantee I know what she's up to today. She's going to work. She's going to be
She's got her chameleon out. Love that. That looks like, that's not, is that a veiled chameleon, Paula?
That was Saturday, last Saturday. We saw that we had that one last Saturday. So, yeah, I'm not sure what that is, but it is a nice lizard.
Oh, yes. It's a chameleon. I think it's a veiled chameleon. There are so many species of those. And folks, it takes a lot of care. Paula must really know what she's doing. It takes a lot of care to keep a chameleon. They're not like a pet snake. You just throw it in a tank and take care of it. Snakes are easy to keep. Chameleons are not. But you know what? One of the great things about Nellie Neal's weekend gardening show is that she reaches out all across Mississippi. We've also got listeners from Louisiana, Arkansas, Tennessee, Alabama, down in the Panhandle area of Florida. And we want to talk to you
DC
this morning.
We have D.C., too.
D.C.
Yeah. Joel and his wife, Natasha, listen to us.
There's somebody out in Colorado that calls
in. We get a lot.
In.
Yeah, we get people from all over.
Yeah.
So we might not have the zone specific, but we have the internet. We can we can help you out if you have a question, I can assure you.
Well, if you're listening out there and you want to talk about what's going on in your yard, we'd love for you to give us a call. This show is always much more interesting when our callers call in, and you can give us a call. Let me give you those numbers at 888-808-8637. Of course, that's a toll-free number, 888-808-8637. Or if you're not driving, you can give us a text at 601-879-4395. That number again, 601-879-4395. And as I like to say, Lance, if you're dialing in from Rome, you can catch us at XXXIVIV.
You actually know what that means, right?
Yeah. Get a little Roman numerals.
You know
going
the numerals.
There.
I would have a hard time with that.
I had to teach it for a while. So I don't know if you know, I have a surprise for the listeners out there. And that is after 42 years, I have decided to retire. And this is the first time I've been on the air since I turned in my papers. So, ladies and gentlemen, I am now a retired individual. I've entered the retired force, and I'm looking forward to doing a lot more birding after this hot weather is over. I'm going to get out in the mornings and do a lot more birding in our area. I'm excited about that, and I'll also be working with my model railroad. I am planning on building a huge in-scale layout in a room of my house and really looking forward to that. So give us a call this morning. We'd love to talk to you about what's going on in your yard. We've got a caller on the line coming in now, and Lance is taking care of that, and he's shaking his head.
It's bad connection. I know he's from Houston, Mississippi, and had a connection, but that's as far as I could get. We had an in-and-out connection. Maybe he'll give us a call back here in a minute.
Call us back. And folks, if you're out there listening, you've got to have questions about birds, birding, gardening for the birds. If you want to know, here's something that we could talk about right now, Lance, and that is, it is hummingbird time. Every year, probably mid to late May and June, I get all these calls from everybody wanting to know where the hummingbirds are. Well, we are beyond the 4th of July weekend. And once that 4th of July weekend comes, the birds start staging and moving south. Now is when you're going to start seeing all those hummingbirds. They're going to start becoming more and more and more prevalent. And sometime around the beginning of September, we're going to have a great time through the end of July and into August. And then sometime around the beginning of September, those numbers are going to really peak. I like to say the first weekend, second weekend of September, and they'll stay strong through the beginning of October, and then they'll start to slowly die off, not die, but the numbers will slow down until we get to around the middle of October, the end of October. And if you see a hummingbird after that, I would encourage all the listeners out there, give Nellie a call and she can get in touch with me, because we will have some absolutely, absolutely beautiful hummingbirds come in the wintertime. A lot of folks don't realize we get somewhere around, we have had over 11 species of hummingbird over winter here in Mississippi. And some of them were so rare that people came from all over the country to see them. We are really a good spot, especially down along the coastal counties, those of you that are listening down there. Great spot for hummingbirds. I've had some ultra rarities in my yard, and my old mantra is, if you build it, they will come. You got to build that backyard up. You got to make it your front yard. It doesn't matter. If you build it, they will come. And the hummingbirds are numerous.
Well, we have a great comment here from the 985. I haven't even looked that one up yet. But she says, I've been saving this one for when you came on. My granddaughter is feeding the hummingbirds this spring. And that's the image that we have on the screen right now.
Okay.
On the television. And so you can see three beautiful little red-necked hummingbirds, green-back.
Those are ruby-throated hummingbirds.
There you go. See, there we go.
And they are beautiful. Look at that on her hands. You can certainly get them used to coming in. I love the one on the right has his mouth open. He's fussing that somebody's not happy. That looks like a female on the right. Well, you can train any bird to come in and feed out of your hands, just about. There is a photographer out there that I watch on Facebook, and she shoots video of the birds coming in and landing on her hand to feed. And it's amazing to watch all the different species of birds that come in and land on her hand. That is quite a nice picture. They're in the 985 zone. I'm not sure where that is, Lance.
I'm going to look it up here in a second. Okay. I've got my hands full getting some images up. Paula sent a beautiful little box turtle. And it was funny because, you know, I have a bird dog named Hawk. And he was running around the yard so excited the other day. And I heard something in his head and mouth. He could put a whole goose in his mouth. He's so big. And I heard something rattling around in his mouth as he was running. And he was just so happy about life, as he always is, but he was more exuberant. And I finally got him to come over, and he put this box turtle down in front of me that obviously was live, and it was shelled up, like scared to death.
But right.
My bird dog had been running around with it in his mouth, licking it and licking and licking. It was so wet and clean. I mean, the box turtle looked like it had a shine on it, and he was so proud of himself. So he sat it down. I said, no, we're not going to, you know, we're running around with a box turtle. And so I went and put it on the other side of the fence. And he was so excited about finding this turtle. I think he'd been looking for it for probably weeks. And finally, he was able to get to it because he and the lab had been, they've been looking hard under the woodpile. I think that's where it was. But, man, when he found it, the exuberance of a dog, it's like a child in candy. You know, he was so excited. And I was like, he's got something here. I'm hoping it wasn't a red bird, or because he's a bird dog. Now, he chases them. He knows what helicopters and airplanes and rockets and anything that flies. But I was like, man, I hope he didn't get one of those little red birds over there. Sure enough, it had a shell, so we were good.
That's good. Yeah. Shells are always good. I tell you, over the years, we've had quite a few. For those of you that aren't familiar with me, I taught zoology at Madison Central High School. I taught there for 29 years, just completed 42 years in the classroom, and loved what I did. I had a great passion for it. I still do have that passion. It's just physically and the way I taught it was physically demanding and mentally demanding as well. Physically and financially, it was just time for me to step away. I love what I did. I'm going to miss all of my students out there. There's probably a few of them listening. They always like to keep in touch with me and check in on me when I'm on the radio. I'm really excited and apprehensive at the same time about being retired. I can now go bird watching in the mornings. I can work on my railroads. And I have joined, and this is really neat, Lance. I have joined the Madison Beautification Committee. And I have to tell you, those ladies and gentlemen, those of us on the committee, they have worked so hard. Now, I haven't made too many committee meetings because I'm just now getting started. But they have done a remarkable job there in the city of Madison. And I know Ridgeland has done some things well, too, in their little plot. They've got a wildflower garden. But the city of Madison has gone in numerous places throughout the city and put in rows and rows and rows of zinnias. And they plant those and they let them grow up. And then they actually encourage people to come and cut them and have some cut flowers. And,
really?
And,
well, that's
yeah, they've
even
got
better.
Signs up out there in Madison now that say time to cut. And this was a wonderful project by the Madison Beautification Committee, and I'm real excited to be a part of that after teaching for so many years.
Well, there couldn't be a better person to have on the committee than the Birdman himself. No, I'm serious. I don't mean that to be flattering. Anytime you get talented people that have an outdoor mindset, beautification and birds, and you know, I absolutely think you're the right fit. And yeah. I want to say this was James in Kentwood is the one who sent the pictures of the hummingbirds, and he's a retired truck driver and toured with AC/DC for their last tour in the States.
That is my guy
right there. Now that is those are some stories.
And now he's going out with Alabama.
Yeah,
that's
you got Alabama,
cool.
AC/DC, a retired trucker, and he's got a granddaughter that can catch hummingbirds in her hand and feed them.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I like
that's
this
awesome.
Guy. That's my kind of fella.
I just got back from taking 38 people to Costa Rica. You know, I've led these student tours in the summertime to ecologically important areas every summer. And we took 38 people to Costa Rica along with another teacher. Well, there were several teachers along, but my co-group leader was Katie Schust from Rosa Scott High School. And we went to Costa Rica, had a great time, and it turned out that our bus driver, we got to know him really well. He couldn't speak English, but we got to know him real well, and I speak some Spanish. And turned out that he was the official bus driver for Costa Rica's national teams. And the day after he dropped us off at the end of our tour, he was taking the Costa Rica women's national soccer team somewhere. But he was the official driver for their soccer teams. Of course, he says football.
Football.
The soccer teams and their track and field teams and their basketball teams and volleyball. I think those were the four teams that he mentioned. So, you know, our bus drivers and truck drivers out there are really important to us. They get a lot of things done,
more and
we're really
so
appreciative.
As time goes on, I mean,
absolutely.
Gotta have those goods and got to get to and fro.
Got to get
a lot
them
of ball
to
games
and, fro.
And concerts. It's got to be
and
done.
And Amazon.
Yeah, Amazon, that's right.
We're not giving a commercial. We're just talking about all of the online work that gets done out there. Okay, once again, Nellie Neal taking a well-deserved break. I am going to be filling in this week and next week. This is Ken Hackman, the Birdman, welcoming you this morning to Weekend Gardening right here on Super Talk Radio 97.3 FM.
Here comes the sun.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Now's the time to
get. It's a holy place.
Mississippi. Weekend gardening here. Nellie Neal, the garden mama, taking a well-deserved break. And Ken Hagman, the bird man, filling in for her this morning.
I have to say it because I was joking with Nellie yesterday when she texted me. She says, not only will Ken be there tomorrow, he's going to be there next Saturday as well. And I said, wow, double birds.
Double birds.
So, we're getting double bird, man. And that's good because we haven't seen you in a bit.
Well, it has been a while. I've been pretty busy. But
yeah, fill us in a little bit because, you know, football season's about to start. Normally, you're pretty dang booked up.
What
is going to be happening this
supposedly
year?
Supposedly, I'm still announcing football this year.
Good,
so
good.
I'll be around.
Who is your team?
Well,
so our listeners
are out there know that I have been the voice of the Jaguars at Madison Central High School for quite a few years. I've been announcing football, volleyball, boys and girls basketball, boys and girls soccer, baseball, and junior varsity baseball. And I usually do the JVs of the soccer and the volleyball as well. So I stay pretty busy during the sports seasons, but I love doing it. I do it for the kids and just absolutely love that connection that I have with my students. And that was part of my passion for teaching, Lance. I loved being in the classroom. And it's as I said earlier, I was a little apprehensive about going ahead and retiring, but you know, I could have retired 14 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And I want, there's some things that I want to be able to do before I am no longer physically able to do them. I still have a dream of getting to Antarctica, and I hope that happens. Yeah,
I just would go for the penguins. Or not? We do have a phone call from Russ in Clinton, and he has a bird question for the bird man.
Okay, go ahead, Russ.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm in Clinton, and I've been in this same place for 31 years, and I've never had Cooper's Hawks, I believe, is who has moved in. And I love it. Very interesting to watch how they interact. Beautiful birds.
They are indeed gorgeous.
They're predatory, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering what all they prey on. I have a good idea because I've seen them snag birds out of mid-flight. And, I was wondering if they do anything with squirrels or other, or is that their primary diet?
They are in a group of hawks that we call the accipiters, and the accipiters are primarily bird eaters. They are known to take other things. I don't know that I've ever seen a Cooper's take something as large as a squirrel, but they will certainly feed on things that are smaller than that. I would have to look up, to be honest with you. I like to consider myself fairly well-knowledged, but when it comes to Cooper's and sharp-shinned hawks and some of the other accipiters that we have, they're primarily bird feeders. And sometimes I get callers that are really upset about having a Cooper's, but boy, are they beautiful. They're fierce. They're wonderful. And literally, if you stop and think about it, what they are going to catch when they swoop through a yard, what they're going to catch are the slower and weaker birds. So it's helping the survival of the fittest. It's helping gene pools and better fit birds to carry on their legacy. Everybody has to eat, and that includes a lot of times things that other folks don't think about very nicely. But I love my Cooper's Hawks.
I do too, Ken. I love them, and it's beautiful, and it's really given us something new to look at.
Absolutely.
They're amazing. They're amazing animals. And
Have they brought their young out yet?
They have a large stick. Their nest is sticks. It's not leaves. It's
mm-hmm.
sticks. You know, twigs and sticks.
Sure.
Way up in an oak tree.
Yeah. Have they brought their young out yet?
But they're beautiful. There's several, and there's four or five, so I think they have procreated.
Wow.
Which is just fine. Like you say, they're getting the food source.
That's absolutely wonderful.
But Yeah, it's a wonderful, beautiful sight to see. It is. My wife was just concerned about the cats, and I don't think they.
Your cats aren't going to have any problem with a Cooper's Hawk.
No,
no problem at all. You can tell her that she can rest easy on
one. Let me tell you, that's funny, Russ, because my dad and his wife they talk about their little dog, which is one of those little bitty wind up toys that it kind of looks like a rag doll, and there's several Cooper's Hawks that fly around in the backyard high up above the pine trees, and they're always worried that, well, that hawk might can come down and get Maggie. I'm like, I don't think that hawk's going to come down. So yeah, don't I get the same thing all the time. And that's what the other side of that is, watching those hawks fly around. I'd bought a German short-haired pointer, and he was pretty much just all white with the ticks on him, all over with a chocolate head. And I said, you know, he looks just like that Cooper's Hawk. So that's how he got his name, Hawk, was watching the Cooper's Hawks fly around. He looks just like them, too. So a great question this morning, too, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Thanks for the call. We appreciate that.
Well, I thank you so much, and I really enjoy your show. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
For standing in. We love Nellie Neal and love having you.
Oh, I do, too. I do, too.
Have a great day.
You, too, sir. We got a text here that says, I love my backyard and all the birds and enjoy feeding them. The squirrels are my biggest problem with my feeders. Any suggestions on dealing with them?
And the answer to that question, my dad would have the same question for you.
Absolutely, yes. There is a seed out there. Everybody has heard of sunflower seed. There is a seed out there called safflower. S-A-F-F-L-O-W-E-R. I'm going to tell you right up front, it's not cheap, but squirrels don't eat it. There's like one in a million squirrels, maybe one in several hundred thousand, that for some reason are born without taste buds or whatever. I don't know. But they won't touch it, and blackbirds and cowbirds and grackles won't eat it either. Any of the icterids, the icteridae are the blackbird family, they won't touch it either. So typically what I tell folks to do is to mix a 50-50 mix of black oil sunflower with the safflower, and fill your feeder up with that 50-50 mix. Do that for a couple of weeks. Refill the feeders. Keep them full for a couple of weeks with that blend. And then slowly wean out. Go to a 60-40 with mostly safflower, then a 70-30, and then an 80-20. Eventually feed nothing but safflower, and you'll find that your birds are still there, but the squirrels and blackbirds are not. And it is a beautiful seed. It's more expensive, but I think you're probably saving money because of the fact that you're not feeding squirrels and blackbirds, and that's a great way to go. I know that you can get that seed at birding specialty stores in our area here in central Mississippi. I only know of one, and that is Wild Birds Unlimited there in the LaFleur's Gallery Shopping Center. And they carry that safflower seed. It's a fantastic seed to have. You might want to check that out. Okay, we've got Caleb in Starkville that says, good morning, Mr. Hackman. How's retirement? This is one of my former students. And I have to tell you, I'm really proud of Caleb. Y'all know that I've been announcing for a long time. When he was in high school, he started messing around with it. And I got to tell you, Caleb has far surpassed me. He's doing all kinds of announcing all over the state. I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I've even heard him announce a Mississippi State, I think it was a baseball game. Either a baseball game or a basketball game earlier this year.
Basketball is so fast. I couldn't do it. Now, Richard Cross, he'll say, oh, man, I love doing basketball because it's in and out. It's fast.
Yes.
And I can't talk to
I enjoy though. Doing it as well. I enjoy doing it as well. It's a lot of fun. Of course, mine is I've done some live streaming. His is actually on air radio, and I'm so proud of where Caleb has gone. And, Caleb, thanks for listening out there, buddy. I don't know how retirement is yet. I think it'll hit me next month when school actually starts. And because right now it just feels like I'm on summer break, if you know what I mean. Of course, summer break isn't what everybody thinks it is. It's only 2 months. It's not 3 months the way it was 50 years ago.
You're not on the quarter system. Yeah.
Well, not really.
No, in college, when I went to Auburn, we were on the quarter system. So
really?
Four of those babies in a year. So you could basically pick and choose three of the four. Or you could choose all four. Yeah, but they were all pretty much even, Stephen. But now, the summer for the parents is dwindled down to 60 days is not a lot, especially when you're toting the youngsters all over the place to baseball and volleyball and softball and soccer and everything. I mean, then the summer's over and you're like, whoa.
Well, I do have to say that whatever the sport is, I know that Caleb is doing a wonderful job out there. Caleb, I'm proud of you, man, and you have if you ever considered me to be a mentor in any way, you have left me far behind, and I'm very proud of your success, and looking forward to hearing more from you. I when you get to the majors, let me know. Because I fully believe that you'll get there. You've got the drive. We've got a text here from Paul in Hernando that said he went to Antarctica on a tour with his wife, and it was well worth the money and the time, and they were not that cold. When do you want to go to Antarctica, Lance?
I'll go anytime.
No,
gets negative 130, though, at some point, so I'll just need a good parka.
The best time to go to Antarctica is in our winter, because our winter is their summer, and I'm going to get there. Somehow, unless my legs and hips and knees and feet just fall apart, I'm going to get to Antarctica. If I have to maybe join the folks down on the highway that beg at the corners of the interstate.
I'm going to get Admiral Richard Byrd's diary and take it with me just to make sure, just in case the saucers show back up. That's a place that's fascinating to me. Knowing that the Russians, it took about a decade or two almost to mm-hmm. drill down into Lake Vostok, and just wondering and curious what they found down there in this huge lake sealed up.
They have found so many things, not just the Russians. Do you know they have found fern samples in Antarctica mm-hmm. that are the exact same species of the tree ferns in the rainforests in northeastern Australia?
Yeah. I was watching a documentary about the mountain chain that makes up the central barrier basically between West and East Antarctica, and tying those into the West, or yeah, the far west coast of South America, as well with the mountain range in Australia and going up through Africa. So it's almost like a chunk of this was Gotswana broke off, and this is the tip. They found so many interesting things, but I think it's a gold mine of.
There's an ore sample. There's a major O. Load.
I could,
the first letter just kept eluding me. That L was missing. There's a load of ore that can be found nowhere else in the world except right there at that juncture of Africa and over into South America, where South America looks like it would fit in Africa.
Perfect little,
And it's that particular compound's collection of composite ore samples is found nowhere else in the world. And it's just really interesting how the planet works together. Here's a text. Any experience building an owl nesting box? I can tell you yes and no. Owl nesting boxes are absolutely wonderful, and they'll keep the mice and rats down in your area. There are a variety of them. I recommend getting an owl box that's large enough for a barn owl or a great horned owl, and any of our owl species will nest in it. Now, screech owls like a little bit more protection, and they'll get into a nest box. You can find the instructions for building them almost anywhere on the internet. What I would tell you to be careful about is several things. Number one, make sure that there's place for drainage in the bottom. Rain does get into birdhouses. Any well-built birdhouse, and I've seen some beautifully decorative birdhouses that will actually house birds if they are built correctly. They've got to have drainage in the bottom. They need ventilation up at the top. And you can maximize the species that you attract by the size of the hole. But our larger owls will move into any nest box that has an opening large enough for them. The screech owl likes a smaller opening. I've seen them actually in bluebird boxes. But you can buy a box that is specifically designed for screech owls, or you can find the instructions online. Again, I'll give a little plug to our local birding specialty shop here, and they've got some for those of you that are up in North Mississippi. There are several birding specialty shops up in the Memphis area, but the one here in the Jackson area is Wild Birds Unlimited over there in the LaFleur's Gallery Shopping Center.
That's the second time you've mentioned them, so they must have some good stuff.
They've got some good stuff. That's the only place I'll get seed, and their seed is a high-quality seed. I'll have to talk to Kathy and tell her she needs to be advertising here if I'm going to keep talking about her so
much. Love to have her as part of the team, and we love our advertisers. I'll tell you this, the ones that we get in the Handyman Show, which was I wanted to kind of parlay, because what you're talking about here is, what if you don't want to order one? What if you don't want to go buy one? What if you wanted to go pick some wood out, find a plan online, and make your own? Is that something that you could do with any, you know, decent quality, or is it going to just fall apart on you? And two, what kind of wood would you use in building these types of birdhouses?
I like a lot of pine. There are some folks that like to use cedar, because cedar naturally will repel mites and lice and things like that from the birds' nests. Red cedar, eastern red cedar, seems to be the wood of choice there. So, or western red cedar, for that matter. When we come back, we've got text from Keith in Kossuth, or Kossuth. It's Kossuth, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. We've got Keith in Kossuth, and he's got questions about purple martins and Mississippi kites. We'll get that to you next when we come back right here on Weekend Gardening. This is Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for the Garden Mama.
That ain't no way to have fun, son. That ain't no way to have fun, son.
The Mississippi Propane Gas Association was founded in 1941 to represent and promote the views and goodwill of the propane industry. Visit mspropane.com to learn more about our dealers, suppliers, safety, and application of propane. Propane energy for everyone. Visit mspropane.com.
We have one voice, the voice of agriculture. We have one job, growing the products you need every day. We have one mission, fighting for agriculture and rural Mississippi. We have you in mind, caring for your private property rights. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
And good morning, Mississippi. We are back here on Weekend Gardening. Garden Mama taking a well-deserved break. This is Ken Hagman, the Birdman. I'll be here with you this week and next week. A rare back-to-back. I don't know that I've ever done that before, Lance. Back-to-back.
You've never given double birds before?
I've never given double bird, no. I've got my bird nerd shirt on.
Yeah,
I've actually
it,
had a couple of people.
That's a customized job,
yes,
by the way.
I've actually had a couple of people text in that are watching the live stream and tell me that they liked my shirt. So for those of you that let me stand up.
Yeah, please do.
I don't know if everybody can hear me. It's got a great horned owl on it. I'm leaning the wrong way.
There you go.
It's got a great horned owl on it, and the owl has on boots and a hat like I wear, and then binoculars around its neck, and it even has my name down here, Ken. So
Ken the owl.
Well, Birdman, wise owl, not so wise owl, I think, most of the time. We've got several texts, and I missed one down there. Keith, I haven't forgotten you, buddy, but I've got another question that came in quite a few minutes before yours did. The text says, good morning, this is Mike from Lamar County. Where do the white and tan hummingbirds that you see sometimes in the winter? After that, you don't see them. Now, I have to admit, and I'm terrible, Lamar County is further south, right?
Lamar, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, in the wintertime, you're probably seeing buff-bellied hummingbirds, and I don't know exactly. I'm trying to remember exactly where Lamar County is. I'm terrible with where our counties
around,
are.
Around Hattiesburg, right?
Yeah. Buff-bellies get up that far every now and then, but if you see a hummingbird in the wintertime, it's probably either a buff-bellied hummingbird or a Silasphorus bird, usually a Rufous hummingbird.
Rufous, I like that.
Yes, the Rufous hummingbird is the one that we see most commonly in the wintertime here in Mississippi, and they are a beautiful, beautiful reddish, a sort of a rusty red color with green on the back that just glimmers. It's a beautiful bird. But, you know, it goes back to my mantra, if you build it, they will come. If you don't leave your hummingbird feeders out in the wintertime, you're not going to see any of these beautiful winter hummingbirds. They're here whether you leave a feeder out or not. And a lot of people say, I'm afraid to leave my feeder out because it'll keep the poor babies. When it's time for a ruby-throated hummingbird to leave, it's gone. They are not going to stay here.
They say fly like a bird.
Yes.
Day out.
They're not going to stay here unless they are unable to make that flight. And if they're unable to make that flight because they're weak or sick or ill, they'll stay. And that's when we have a ruby throat stay. But almost 99.9% of the time we have a hummingbird after the beginning of November, it's going to be a rufous hummingbird or a buff-bellied hummingbird or one of the other nine species that we've recorded here in Mississippi. And we've had some absolutely stunning hummingbirds here in Mississippi, and they're fantastic. The rest of his question deals with whippoorwills. Well, if you're in Lamar County, yeah,
Three Amigos.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, he's walking around. Is Steve Martin walking on the top of the concrete thing, and they're trying to break into the studio to get their clothes back. And he goes, whippoorwill, whippoorwill, whippoorwill.
Well, if you're in Lamar County, and we've established that, while I wasn't exactly sure, it is to my south. If you're in Lamar County, you don't have whippoorwills down there. You have what's called a chuckwill's widow, which is very closely related. And I do a poor, poor rendition of the call, but if you will listen to it, instead of whippoorwill, whippoorwill, it'll be more like a chuckwiddle, whittle, chuckwiddle, whittle, chuckwiddle, whittle. And I could pull up the app and actually play the two of them for you. It is possible to hear whippoorwills during the April time when they are migrating north, and I have heard them in central Mississippi. But once that April period of migration is over, you're not going to hear whippoorwills anywhere in Mississippi except possibly the far northeastern corner. And they just don't stay this far south. We have the beautiful chuckwill's widow, which looks very much like it. And for those of you out there that are familiar with the common nighthawk, or as my grandfather called them, he lived in the country, he called them bull bats. They come out at night. They're very common feeders. People see them diving, and they roar when they dive after insects. People call them bull bats. The common nighthawk, the whippoorwill, and the chuckwill's widow, along with the common parake, the poorwill, and the lesser nighthawk, the Antillean nighthawk, all a group of nighthawks, buff-collared nightjar, all a group of birds that we have here in North America that we call goat suckers. The old timers used to believe that at night they would feed on the milk from the goats with their big mouths, and they got the name goat suckers. And it's one of those interesting little stories out there. They love pine stands, Paul, or Mike, I'm sorry. They love pine stands. And if you haven't heard them, it's possible. You know, there are several factors going on. One, they need a mature pine stand. Two, we're losing a lot of pines, and I don't know how hard y'all were hit down there. That drought a couple of years ago really killed our pines up here in the central part of the state, and I would say better than 50% of our trees were killed in the black beetle infestation.
You had a two-for-one there.
Yeah.
It was a double whammy, and I'll say Rankin County, I'm not sure where you live, but out in Rankin County, it was devastating.
It was devastating in Madison County, too.
And you had some long, old-growth pines that seemed to go first because you had the drought, and then you had the beetles on top of it, or first and then two. Yeah, I can't remember
which
one. Well,
the drought led to the beetles.
Yeah, right, the beetles were next. And then you get the overabundance of rain, and then you just started seeing stuff fall. And I mean, before that you could tell they were dead, they were falling.
It was pretty bad. Okay, let's get back up to that question that Keith and Kasuth had. He says, tell me some facts about the Mississippi kite. He's got a large purple martin colony and had about 60 kites come in. Wow.
Uh-oh.
And bothered them about a month ago. Several have stayed. Mississippi kites, I've seen them kettle. Kasuth is north of here, isn't it?
Yes, sir. Way up north.
That's
in the Tupelo neck of the woods, northeast corner, yeah. Beetle country.
Yeah.
I
don't know the counties better than
Lamar is Hattiesburg, so you could see my political geography.
That's right.
Yes.
I knew Lamar was Hattiesburg area.
Right. And thanks for our listener of confirming my genius. I always like confirmation of these things.
I love confirmation. It helps out. That's why I miss playing Name That Bird. We haven't had a caller the last couple of times I've been in. We haven't had a caller.
You. The one that at night sits next to your house and just makes a racket and nothing else is awake, or it's early morning and that bird, is that a mockingbird?
Northern mockingbird. Yeah. It is indeed.
What are they doing at that hour? And why? And again, I'm not annoyed. I'm curious. What is their reasoning behind being the early bird to, you know, talking? They're very talkative.
I'm not exactly sure what the evolutionary reason is, but while they're singing at night, there's not much else singing other than night birds.
Yeah.
So it's probably an advantage evolutionarily, and I will go back and read on this because I'm not 100%. It's probably an evolutionary advantage for them to sing at night and attract mates when nothing else is singing. So it makes them easier to be heard, yeah. And it's usually only for a few weeks early in the summer.
Yeah, you don't hear it all the time. No. There's certain conditions.
Just a few weeks. I'm pretty sure that's the reasoning for it. I'll go back and read up, and I'll have that answer when I come on next week.
I had one in Oxford years ago, and it loved that time.
Yes.
And I would be laying in the bed, and for weeks it would be like, all right, guy, come on now. What are you
about,
doing? But I loved, after a while, you get used to it. You're like, that's my bird, man. I love this guy.
Talking about the Chuck Wills widows that the guy had down in Lamar County, I tell you, he should sit and camp out underneath a branch that has Chuck Wills widows on it. Keith in Kossuth, those kites, I've never seen 60 of them at one time kettling. I love Mississippi kites. Personally, I think that they would make a much better state bird for Mississippi than the northern mockingbird. There's 7 states that have the northern mockingbird.
We
need to be more original and have something different. Here we go, ladies and gentlemen, right here. Those of you listening, let's start a move to make the Mississippi kite our state bird. How about that one? We're going to come back and answer the rest of your question, Keith, and get to a couple more when we come back. You're listening to Weekend Gardening. Garden Mama's away, so the Birdman will play. Here's Ken Hackman right here on Weekend Gardening.
We are advocacy. A century of winds. Protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation. 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
When guys like me separate from the military, we tried to move forward. But to truly move forward, we need to take care of our bodies and our minds. I finally understood that after I went to VA. I saw the difference it made to have providers who understood what I've been through and know how to help. I'm getting the highest quality health care at the lowest cost. And I'm telling every veteran I know that taking care of yourself is the strongest thing you can do. Get what you've earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Think for a moment.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
And once again, good morning, Mississippi. Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Nellie this morning. And I'll be back again next week, so grab those questions, get them together, and give us a call or give us a text, and we'll get to them. We were talking about Keith's kites in Kossuth. And one of the wonderful thing about kites, Keith, and I can tell you exactly what was going on with the Purple Martins. Kites are, we mentioned the Cooper's Hawk earlier in the show, the accipiter. Kites are also accipiters. But the kites are not bird eaters. The smaller accipiters, the kites, are primarily aerial insect feeders. And they soar up in the air and catch large insects that fly way up high. And I tell you, I love our Mississippi kites here in Mississippi, and we've got them nesting somewhere near my house. I haven't located the nest, but I see them every day over my yard, every day that I'm looking up. And they are very, very good at nesting in large trees, usually in areas that are somewhat open, golf courses, suburban areas. They are one of the few hawks that have done really, really well managing survival with human continuation of deforestation and other sort of situations. I actually had a gentleman call me about 5 years ago that had a kite that built a nest in his hedge that low to the ground, which I thought was very interesting. Most kite nests I've ever seen have been up high, so that one was quite a surprise. And he found the nest when he was trimming his hedge and literally cut the top off the hedge, and there was the nest at the level that he was cutting the hedge, and it kind of frightened him that he had done that. But the young were able to fledge okay, and everybody was fine. Beautiful bird. I got some really nice pictures because the parents were still going to come in and feed those babies. I want to touch on that just a second. We've got a couple of other texts, and I have to tell you, I'm loving the pictures. Our semi-retired truck driver is sending in some gorgeous shots of his hummingbird feeders and his yard and bird bath and everything. And, boy, those are great. And I'm glad you get the chance to enjoy them. And I'm looking forward to enjoying that kind of activity in my yard much more now that I am going to be retired. Really looking forward to that. I'm going to miss being in the classroom and sharing my passion for wildlife and nature with all of my students. It's been wonderful over the last 42 years to get to do that. And I have students that I taught 42 years ago sending me pictures in on Facebook and other things. Just great memories from so many years back. And it's been absolutely wonderful. Speaking of memories, I got a text a little while ago, and I just want to give a shout-out. This has nothing to do with birds. One of the most beautiful voices in our Jackson metro area for many, many years was the beautiful voice of Anna Dennery McDonald. Anna McDonald used to perform with the opera here in Jackson and has done so much beautiful music. And I was so blessed many years ago. Actually, it was 1996, and I remember that because it was the year that Mississippi State went to the Final Four. In 1996, I had the great honor of performing as the King of Siam in the Broadway musical The King and I. And, of course, Anna, and I thought it was really interesting, Anna Dennery McDonald played Anna. If you know, the regular play is called Anna and the King, and the musical is The King and I. So it was a great pleasure to work with Anna and the rest of the folks that were there at Galloway United Methodist Church downtown. And I'm not sure if they still do this or not, but for many years they had a director by the name of Virginia Fox Metz that put on some of the best musicals around. And it was such a pleasure getting to work with such a talented singer as Anna Dennery McDonald. She was absolutely wonderful. Her middle name there, Dennery, if you might recognize from the old Dennery's Restaurant. That was her family that had that. A great restaurant in Jackson that was there for many, many years. Okay, let's get back to the text lines here. Nathan in Smith County was talking about the fact that he had to cut every bit, all of his 50 acres. He had 22-year-old pines because of beetles that were started by the drought, of course. Can you imagine losing 50 acres of pines? That is a major financial loss, and it probably cost him a lot of money to cut them down. I have heard, now I don't know this to be true, anecdotally I have heard that the city of Madison was looking into cutting down or removing all of the dead pines in the city, and that it was going to run into the millions of dollars to have that done. So, city officials have to make those kinds of decisions. Now, I don't know that it actually was that much, but I heard that from multiple sources on an anecdotal basis. So that may or may not be true, but can you imagine having to cut down 50 acres of pines?
No, I mean, first of all, like you said, the cost of the loss, number two, the cost of getting rid of it and getting those down, you would hope that one day we would find use for things such as that, that, you know, these huge logs that just cost a fortune to, you know, weed out and all that. And you'd, it'd be nice if there was some kind of, like, fuel source or something that we could derive from that.
Pine can't be used to cook over, on an open flame anyway.
Sure, but it sure does have a lot of sap in it if you want to do an outdoor yard fire.
Outdoor barn fire, absolutely.
So
they are great.
With all that glue in it, that it would be some type of potential for, you know, like not charcoal or anything, but something that you could use in a fire creating or pellet, something like that. I don't know. I mean, I know you can't cook with it, but there's got to be some other industrial use.
Sure.
That doesn't require you to eat it. You just need heat.
Well, do you know that, and a lot of folks don't know this, you know what turpentine is, and a lot of folks don't know that lemon flavoring, when you buy lemon flavoring in the grocery store, I don't know if it still is, but my botany textbooks that I taught out of for years and years and years, as of about 10 or 15 years ago, lemon flavoring was made from turpentine. It had turpentine in it, which is completely safe for us to take in. It's a natural product. But I found that very interesting when I first read it.
It does a good job of getting rid of paint, too, and appropriate
absolutely.
But yeah, that's interesting.
Do you know that we got the idea for chewing gum from native peoples, indigenous peoples chewing the sap from various trees?
Okay.
Here in North America, it was primarily pine, but in Central and South America, it was the chicle tree, which is where we had chiclets. You remember the little chiclet gum squares?
I lived in Mexico for a bit, and man, those little chiclets down there, those were great.
Yeah. I loved them.
They used
to have them up
here. Yeah.
Yeah. We've got a wonderful text here from Katie down in Long Beach. And Katie says she works in retail and corporate sales. That was from last time. That was back from August 17th. She's talking about the Arboretum and concerts back then. Today she sent a beautiful photograph of a black-chinned hummingbird that was caught and banded in Long Beach last winter. Another example of one of those many, many species of hummingbird that we have. And a black-chinned hummer, the gorget feathers of most of our hummingbirds appear black until the sun hits them. The black-chinned hummingbird actually has a bit of an iridescent purplish green to it when it hits really well. It's not as easy to see as the rosy red of the ruby throated hummingbird, but we've had blue throated hummingbirds in Mississippi. We've had broad tailed and broad winged and broad billed hummingbirds. Just some of the most beautiful birds you can imagine have been found right here in the state of Mississippi. I was once way down in South Texas. I had a group of 9 students with me, and we were birding down in South Texas right along the Rio Grande River. We were actually camped out at Benson Rio Grande State Park, and I loved to call my wife every night while I was away. I still try to keep in touch with her as much as I can anytime I'm out of town. I love my gorgeous wife. We were in South Texas, and I talked to my wife, and she said, Ken, Jean called and said something about a hummingbird with a white ear. And immediately I knew she was talking about a white-eared hummingbird, and there was a white-eared hummingbird somewhere in Mississippi. So I said, I love you. Can I go call Jean? And that was the shortest conversation I think I've ever had with my wife, while I was out of town anyway. And I called Jean, and it turned out that there was a white-eared hummingbird down in Gulfport. And that bird was the only one that had ever been seen outside of the state of Arizona.
Wow.
Ever. At that time.
Catch a ride?
Here I was with 9 young men camping out down in South Mississippi. They were students of mine, a sort of a bird-watching outing. I've had some great bird-watching students over the years that really got into it. And we're down there, and the guy saw the look on my face when I got back because we had just gotten down there, and I didn't want to cut the trip short or say, hey, guys, can we go home? So I went back, and one of the guys said, Mr. Hammond, what's going on? And I said, well, there's a white-eared hummingbird in Gulfport. And they said, is that special? Well, it certainly is. Told them I'd never seen one. That would be a life bird for me. And a little while later, we turned in, went to sleep and everything, and somebody came and scratched on my tent and said, "Hey, Mr. Hackman, can we go see that bird?" So it was. We had just gotten there. We drove all the way to Gulfport. That's about a 16-hour drive. Drove all the way to Gulfport and got there half an hour after the bird was last seen. So we missed it. We did not get to see it. I got to see it later in Arizona, that species. But we drove that far and missed the bird. So what did the guys want to do? They wanted to turn around and go back to South Texas. So we had a great time, and it was a wonderful trip. A lot of good bird watching.
That picture that was sent by Katie, how do you catch a hummingbird in your hand and hold it like it's a little
I've been involved in that for many years. I used to go out with Bob Sargent, who, and I'm not joking, literally wrote the book on hummingbirds. If you look up the ruby-throated hummingbird on Amazon.com or any other bird, any other book dispensary online, hard to find in the stores anymore, but if you look up The Ruby-Throated Hummingbird by Bob Sargent, S-A-R-G-E-N-T, Bob Sargent. And I used to go out with him and go banding with him here in the central Mississippi area and down along the Alabama coastline area. And we would capture these things. Bob built a trap, and he would hang the feeder in the trap, and he would hold the door was being held open by fishing line, and he'd sit 50 feet away with 50 feet of fishing line holding onto that thing that was held up, and the birds would fly around the hummingbird feeder. You put it where the hummingbird feeder usually is that the bird comes to, and you hang the feeder inside the trap. He would mount it up on a tripod or hang it if that was the appropriate place, and as soon as the hummingbird figured out how to get into the feeder, he just lets go of the line, and the trap door would close, and then you reach in and you take out the hummingbird and band it. There are also mist nets that can be used to catch hummingbirds. I had two calliope hummingbirds, which are absolutely stunning. Had two calliope hummingbirds in my yard one year, and Bob came up, and we set up mist nets and a trap, and he confirmed they were calliope hummingbirds, which is what I thought, but we were never able to catch those two suckers. And we did catch a ruby-throated hummingbird that winter, which was unusual to have a ruby throat that far north in Mississippi during the wintertime. So you never know what you're going to have, and there comes my mantra again. If you build it, they will come. It's important to keep those feeders up and really, really, really take a look at what's going on.
My question for you is, I haven't seen you in a while, and going with bats here.
Oh, yeah. Love my bats.
Yeah. So if you're going to build a bat house or you want to put one, you said always you want it back away from light, kind of off the property a bit. And because, I've seen the mosquitoes quite frankly, frequently this year. They've been extremely heavy with the dampness. And I know bats eat millions of those mosquitoes.
Well, a single little brown bat will eat 7,000 mosquitoes a night. Mm-hmm. And the typical bat house will house 300 to 500 bats. So I want you to think about 500 bats eating 7,000 mosquitoes a night. Do that math real quick, and you're looking at an awful lot of mosquitoes being eaten. I have a soapbox here, and you are close to getting me up on my soapbox.
I like the soapbox.
Everybody doesn't agree with me, but I will tell you that every biologist I know agrees with me, and that's the fact that our municipalities and counties and even state government, quite a few years ago when the West Nile virus started popping up, spraying for mosquitoes just exploded. Municipalities and towns all over the state started spraying for mosquitoes much more than they had in the past. And that has done quite a bit of damage to our native predators of mosquitoes. Dragonfly numbers are down. Gambusia, the little mosquito killifish that live in the creeks and ponds, their numbers are down. Because what's happening when we spray for mosquitoes, we get a knockdown rate of 40 to 60%. And that 40 to 60% that survives the opposite of the other 40 to 60% are then carrying that toxin around in their body. And when a little brown bat eats 7,000 mosquitoes in a single night, he bioaccumulates all of that toxin, and we're killing the bats. We're killing the dragonflies. We're killing the frogs and toads that would eat these things, and we're killing the gambusia that eat the larvae in the water and spraying cancer-causing agents into the air that we breathe. And that is one of my huge soapboxes. I've talk to people that run these mosquito companies and spray, and of course that's how they make their living, and they want to deny that there's any danger of spraying those chemicals in the air that we breathe. But I tell you what, we are doing several things that are increasing our cancer rates in our country. I know that everybody gets on to that, well, you might as well enjoy life, everything causes cancer. But It doesn't have to. I like to drink my Cokes out of a can instead of out of a plastic bottle. Coke has acid in it. So does tomato juice and orange juice and all the citrus juices. And you think that acid doesn't do something to the inside of the plastic bottle? And
plastic's made out of oil.
We have estimated that close to 93% of all Americans over the age of six are test positive for BPA.
The forever particle.
Forever particle. And a cancer, we've all got cancer cells in our body, but a cancer can be caused by any unnatural substance that gets into the body. Anything that doesn't belong there can cause a cancer cell to start metastasizing. And I'm just, it's one of my soapboxes. I'm tired of chemicals and preservatives and additives and plastic, and I would love to move away from all of that. If I could. I try to buy everything I can in glass or paper, whatever. It's kind of hard to go get that steak and have it wrapped in paper these days. We'll be back in just a little bit, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ken Hackman, the Birdman. Call us if you have questions about birds or gardening for the birds at 888-808-8637 or text us at 601-879-4395. We're filling in for Garden Mama this morning right here on Super Talk Radio.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811.
You hear that?
Met a lot of people, met a lot of friends. She got the feeling of a swamp playing around through, but she going back home, but she don't know when.
Lance and I are both dancing. Lance behind the glass and me behind the microphone. Good morning, Mississippi and surrounding areas. We've got listeners from all over the country, especially now that we've got that live stream going. For those of you that are checking in on the live stream, I'm wearing my Bird Nerd shirt. This is Ken Hackman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama. Nellie Neal is taking a well-deserved break. I have no idea where she is, Lance, and I'm just happy for her wherever she is that she has a chance to have a couple of weekends off. And I'm excited to be filling in for today and next Saturday. Always enjoy coming into the station and getting a chance to talk to our listeners out there about what's going on in their yards and birding. We've got a comment that somebody came in here. Oh, who was it? It was Liz. Has pointed out, and this is very true, mosquito spraying kills fireflies too. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize. If you wondered where have all the fireflies gone, get out into the country somewhere where they don't spray for mosquitoes and you will find your fireflies. They're still around. They're just elsewhere. And I'm just a big proponent of doing away with all of that. Oh, beautiful. There's a nice picture. I can't quite. It's a hawk up on top of a stump.
Or a stump, yeah.
Telephone pole. Oh, and he's being mobbed. He's being mobbed. That's a very common practice. Who is that? I don't see a name. Oh, that's our retired truck driver, semi-retired truck driver. Hawks are often mobbed by things. But where were we? We were talking to Nathan in Smith County. I'm sorry, Nathan. I'm severely ADHD, if you folks haven't figured it out. I'll be popping here and there and everywhere. Nathan says he's got a lot of bats. This was the gentleman that had to cut all 50 acres of his 22-year-old pines. He has a lot of bats in the area, and mosquitoes are very rare in his area, he says, and that's because of the bats. He also has chimney swifts. That's S-W-I-F-T-S. A chimney sweep, and I hear this from people all over the state. Most everybody calls them chimney sweeps. A chimney sweep is someone that comes and cleans your chimney with brushes. A chimney swift is the bird, and they are very swift, and they eat a lot of insects, and they are flying around a lot at dusk. They do take in a lot more mosquitoes than purple martins do. Everybody loves their purple martins, but actually purple martins only eat about 3% of their diet is mosquitoes. I love purple martins too, and I'm happy to see people put up birdhouses for them and gourds and whatnot, but the chimney swifts do a really wonderful job, and the chimney swift is a story that is really a sad one here in the country. When Europeans first came to North America, there was this vast forest east of the Mississippi River. Most of the eastern half of the United States was covered in a great, huge forest. And as we cleared it and cut down all the timber, all the virgin timber from the eastern half of the U.S. is gone. In those virgin timber stands, there were a lot of hollow trees. And chimney swifts traditionally and naturally would nest in those hollow trees. Well, by the time John James Audubon got here, most of the chimney swifts were nesting in chimneys in colonial America. And that's how they got the name chimney swift, because Audubon found them all nesting in chimneys. And that was how they got their name. Sadly, because people don't like hearing the chirping in their chimneys, most people are now putting caps on their chimneys, and the chimney swifts have even fewer places to nest. So there has been a move nationwide, and I have been responsible for getting others to build chimney swift towers. In fact, during my years at Madison Central, I was able to get three different Eagle Scouts to build chimney swift towers on the campus at Madison Central High School. And those provide nesting places for chimney swifts. And each tower will only house one pair of chimney swifts. In a single chimney, only one nest will be built. Now, in the fall, when they're coming back south, getting ready to fly south for the winter and head across the Gulf, then they will roost in chimneys by the hundreds. And if you've never seen a chimney swift tornado, you are really missing out. It's something to see 100 chimney swifts flying in circles, and they'll get tighter and tighter and tighter, and that tornado just kind of whirls around, and then flying at full speed, and I don't know, 30, 40 miles an hour, they just all at once just disappear into the chimney. And it's a sight to see when 100, 200, 300 chimney swifts all descend into a large chimney like that.
I've seen some videos like in England where you have the old brick towers that are chimneys, and you'll see the swirl and them go in there. But every time I think of chimney sweeps, I think like, hello, governor. You know, like some
hello,
dude. You know, hello, governor.
That's from
Do you need your
Mary
chimney
Poppins.
Sweep?
Yeah.
You know, that's always what I think of.
That's what a chimney sweep is. The chimney swift
is the
bird.
Is the actual bird. Okay. Hello, governor. You need your chimney sweep.
Yep. I love those chimney swifts. Corinne in Jackson says, good morning. This year when my bluebirds landed on my bluebird box and were trying to build a nest, house sparrows kept chasing them away. I even witnessed a mid-air fight between the sparrows and the bluebirds. This territory battle went on for several days, but the sparrows won. I removed four or five of their nests from the box. No eggs yet laid. And I will do that, Liz. No, Corinne, I'm sorry. I will remove a house sparrow nest before they lay their eggs. Once they lay their eggs, I don't mess with them. That's actually against the law. Once there are eggs in a nest, it's illegal to touch. Federal law. I can tell you what can be done. A sparrow will not nest in a box that it can rain into. Bluebirds don't mind that at all. As long as there's enough drainage down at the bottom, what I will do is cut a hole the size of a quarter. You can use a drill or whatever you want to. Cut a hole the size of a quarter in the very top middle of that bluebird box and tack some hardware cloth, if you know what hardware cloth is, real tight mesh. I like to use the really tight mesh hardware cloth. Tack some of that around it so squirrels won't chew it open or anything like that. And house sparrows will not nest in it. If there's a hole in the top, the bluebird still will. There's another box that has a horizontal slot up at the top. And for some reason, the house sparrows don't like that one either. There are lots of things that you can do to prevent them, but diligence is probably the best thing. Keep fighting those house sparrows away. There are places that have house sparrow traps. You can actually trap the house sparrows and relocate them somewhere, get them out of that territory, relocate them somewhere. If I were to do that, I've never actually trapped house sparrows, but they sell house sparrow traps, and I believe they've got one you can rent at that local birding specialty shop that I've probably mentioned already too many times today.
LeFleur's Gallery.
Yes, in LeFleur's Gallery, there is a birding specialty shop. I might as well go ahead and say it. It's Wild Birds Unlimited.
Yeah, what did you say the fabric, the type of fabric, and where can
hardware
we purchase
cloth.
That?
You can get it in any hardware store. It's that square
Eight
mesh.
Rebel Ace, a good spot to
Oh,
make.
Sure. Okay. Sure, sure. It's that hard mesh. You cut it with tin snips.
Okay. Really, my dad, they have an issue with the squirrels eating out the circular opening for the birds.
Yes.
And so that would prevent.
That would help. At that burning specialty shop,
yes, yes.
They sell a slate, a piece of slate that is cut and drilled, and you can screw that over the hole and put it in the right place.
And they've got a nice door.
They have a nice doorway. A nice the predators can't get in as well.
Curb appeal's nice.
Squirrels can't chew through rock. Yeah, it's a known fact.
The curb appeal looks good for the birds.
Absolutely. And if you're going to build your own bluebird boxes, while we're on the topic with my ADHD out there, look, there goes a squirrel. I would advise you, please, 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 never build a bluebird box or any bird house for that matter with a peg sticking out underneath the hole. A lot of people do that. They think it's a good place for the bird to perch. It's not. Birds don't perch on those pegs. And in fact, if you put a peg there, it's likely not going to get used. If it does get used, it's a dangerous thing because raccoons can hold onto that peg and then reach in and take out the baby birds, the eggs, whatever. Speaking of which, Lance, I'd like you to grab that picture that I gave you earlier, and let's talk about my backyard's a little wonderful joy. We were talking about the damage that was done to all the pine trees. This pine tree was not damaged in any way. It was a living pine tree, a very large living pine tree, and you will see the broken fence as soon as Lance finds that picture and gets it up online. You'll see that broken fence to the right. A branch from the pine tree came down on that broken fence and broke it about 4 years ago. And my next door neighbor is a wonderful gentleman, great guy. You couldn't meet a nicer fellow. And he's 90 years old, still gets out in the yard and does his yard work. He's an amazing man. I'm embarrassed to see him out working when I hire somebody else to do my yard. It's really embarrassing. But that tree branch fell down on his fence and broke it 4 years ago. You see, the fence is still broken. I need to repair that for him. But up at the top of that tree, I cut the top out and took all the branches off, and I left it there. And I've got red-headed woodpeckers nesting in it. I have eastern bluebirds nesting in it in the first hole that the red-headed woodpeckers made. You know, I did this in my previous yard in Madison on Lisa Circle. I actually planted a dead tree that I cut out of somebody else's yard. But this one was just one living in my backyard, and I just cut all the branches off and topped it out at about 30 feet. And those red-headed woodpeckers are coming in and out of that thing. I think the little ones have fledged. I saw the adult coming out yesterday morning, but when I was out there this morning, I didn't see any activity at all. I think the little ones have come out. If you see something that looks like a woodpecker but has a gray head, that's probably an immature red-headed woodpecker. They don't get that red head right away. That takes a while. But
they
that's what I did in
stripes.
My backyard.
They got to earn their stripes.
They have to earn their helmet, so
yeah,
to speak.
Yeah, they got to go bang on wood enough until it just
absolutely.
The blood rushes to the scalp. Maybe I need to do that. You know,
right? We've got another text here. I thought house sparrows, starlings, and rock. Their rock doves or rock pigeons weren't federally protected. Joe, down there in Kill, I'm not sure. House sparrows are invasive. Rock pigeons are invasive. Starlings are certainly invasive. The house sparrow is actually not a sparrow. It is a weaver finch that came from Europe. And as such, it may be not federally protected. As someone who is known across the state as the Birdman, if I were caught taking a nest with eggs in it out of a box, I might get in trouble with my listeners. That's about all I'll say.
Hey, Agent Starling was federally protected.
Yes,
you know,
well.
Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
Now, I wanted to ask you, Starling, why would Agent Starling have been given the name Starling? What are the characteristics of starlings that make it so, well, you said invasive, so what are some other things that would...
Starlings worldwide are actually beautiful birds, and if you look at the colors on a European starling in the sunlight, they are magnificent. They're really beautiful birds. I can't stand them. I call them tree rats. I really don't like starlings myself. I have listeners and friends that love them. Starlings are often the birds that you see creating the murmurations out of, above fields and whatnot. They take away bluebird nesting cavities and chickadee and nuthatch nesting cavities. They've really caused a lot of trouble across the country. And the person that called in here from the 228 or texted in is absolutely correct that they are they're not federally protected in my opinion. I'm pretty sure that he's right about that. I know that the starling is not, and I know that the rock dove or rock pigeon is not. That name is bounced back and forth, and let me pull up my Sibley. I'm getting questions on my phone here.
Blowing you up.
Absolutely. Keith from Madison wants to know if there's any information on building your own chimney swift tower. Keith, I am personally, since you and I know each other, I am personally going to bring a copy of the book to you so that you can get the information. There is a wonderful book that anybody can purchase online on how to build a chimney swift tower, and there are different ways to do it. There are schools now, and I've seen one picture of a school that built one that was something like 100 feet tall. It was just a massive chimney that they built attached to the school somewhere up in the Midwest. And they had a door in the bottom so that students could go in, and there was light switch. They could take a look at what was going on.
Pro job there.
Yeah. That's a school district that was really investing in not just their students' education, but investing in the future of a species here in our country, despite the fact that that big, huge chimney would only hold one group of nesting swifts every year, but it'd be a good host place. We've got a couple more texts to get to. We've got one more segment to go here on Super Talk Radio. This is Ken Hagman, the Birdman, filling in for Garden Mama, and we'll be back after just a minute here on Super Talk Radio. Give us a call.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR, benefits, and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
From the seed and the soil grows row after row. We take care of this land using just the right amount of our natural resources and never more than we need.
We are only one of thousands, but we are united as one to grow the food, fiber, and shelter you need every day. Because Mississippi needs us. Mississippi needs farmers, the farm families of Mississippi.
The best made to...
And good morning. We're back for our final segment here on Weekend Gardening. Garden Mama Nellie Neal is away. Ken Hagman here, the Birdman, filling in. We're going to talk about gardening for birds, or we have been for quite a while. We've been talking about bats and mosquitoes, and the current population seems to be chimney swifts. I've got a caller here that thought that they had chimney swifts nesting under their porch. They're more likely to be barn swallows, and I would encourage that listener to go out and look that up. Google barn swallow on your phone or on your laptop and check and see if that's what you've got. And then I've got Mara in Madison, who says the past 2 years her bluebirds have laid eggs, but the eggs didn't hatch. Mara, I would ask what kind of bluebird box you have. If there's not enough ventilation up in the top of that box, we are having, and I don't want to get into a huge argument or confrontation with anybody. Everybody knows it's getting warmer. Everybody knows it's getting hotter. And the hotter it gets, the more important it's going to be for bluebirds and their houses to be put in locations where they're not going to be overheated. First, they need to have enough ventilation in the top. Bluebirds do like to be out in the open, but as long as the nest box faces the open, the box itself can be in the shade. Some of the best nest boxes I know of are mounted on pine trees under the shade of the pine tree facing an open area. They like to have an open area of 20 feet or so, at least 20 to 25 feet in front of the box with no obstructions in front. And that's so when the little ones get up and leave, or when they approach and come and go, there are no obstructions for them to have to worry about. They love to zoom right in and hop right into that hole. So, Mara, if you will rethink where it's located, or check to see that it's got enough ventilation up at the top. A lot of people build wonderful bluebird boxes, and they'll check on the size of that opening, but they don't necessarily think about the drainage holes that need to be in the bottom of it or the ventilation areas that need to be in the top. So check that and see if that will help you out. Good to hear from you, and yes, go Jags.
Hey, one question for you. My papaw was an absolute lover of martins. Now, I know that you get the sound and the birds and you have the gourds, and it was a process, and he loved it. And we had gourds for years, and they were farming folks. So I imagine these were gourds that they had brought from the farm and hollered out and hung. But those were his cherished prizes.
Oh, yes.
So what is so important, or what is so lovable? And I think they're cute as they can be, you know, but what is it that makes the martin such a desired bird to have? And why would you want it around?
Well, because they fly around all day long and feed on insects all day long, aerial insects. They're aerial insect feeders. All of your swallows and swifts are. They feed on insects in the air. There is a misconception or a misperception that martins eat a lot of mosquitoes, and they just don't. They eat a lot of insects, yes, but mostly no mosquitoes because they're out during the daytime.
Okay.
And they go to roost usually before the mosquitoes are very active. Studies have been done, and about 3% of a martin's diet is mosquitoes. That means 97% of what they eat has nothing to do with it.
Well, and
but
if you
farmers, folks out in
makes total
in,
sense.
And I'll tell you, if you think about it,
they were right next to the garden, which at that time was not a farm, but it was
right.
more like a half-acre nice garden that had everything that they had grown in much more bulk.
Uh-huh.
But that, I guess that was the protector of the olive, I mean, of the figs, of the apple trees, of the garden, because he loved them.
A lot of people don't like having barn swallows under their porch, but I will tell you that most farmers, especially your livestock farmers, absolutely love having purple martin gourds or purple martin houses and barn swallows everywhere because they eat flies. And everybody knows that flies cause a lot of problems for livestock.
Yeah.
So that's probably where a lot of that got
question.
Started. And people really do have this misconception that purple martins eat a lot of mosquitoes. If you want to get rid of mosquitoes, put up a bat house. That's the way to go. And again, we've got to stop spraying. And I know that there are people out there that make their living that way. And I'm sorry, but the way I look at it, and I may get a lot of feedback on this, and I'll take whatever is coming. The way I look at it, we were not required to make sure that every blacksmith that existed in the 1800s could continue being a blacksmith. And I think there are some jobs and some careers out there that need to fade into the distance and find another way to make a living, sadly. And I think that spraying for mosquitoes is one of those things. We're just killing too many mosquitoes the wrong way, and it's having a really negative effect on our environment everywhere. We're missing the fireflies, the dragonflies, the toads, the frogs, the tree frogs, so many things, the bats, nighthawks, so many things are being
killed.
I have
not seen as many bats in the last year or two that I was seeing, you know, probably 3 or 4 years ago. There would be 10 or 15 buzzing around lights and this and that and the other in the yard, but you see maybe one or two.
I think a lot of that has to do with how much spraying is going on now, and I would tell municipalities out there, and I have talked to some. I don't want to make any declarations of what communities. I have been consulted or asked to consult in several communities about things, and I've made the comment that they needed to stop spraying. And I've had aldermen and mayors from various towns across the state tell me that if they don't spray, if that truck doesn't go up and down the street, they'll get hundreds of phone calls from residents wanting to know why they're not spraying. And I think it's a matter of education, Lance. We've got to educate young people, and I've been doing so in my classroom for 42 years. We've got to educate young people about the needs of our planet. I'm going to get a little preacher. God called us to be good stewards of His creation. And I think that it's important that we do that. We've got to be good stewards of His creation, and we're not doing that when we destroy it. Conservation has the word conserve in it, and there are many things that are so important to us that we've got to protect for our future generations. It's necessary. It is said that for every species that goes extinct, it creates a domino that causes 10 more to go extinct.
Well, and what you're saying is basically, as a child, you had the cartoon that would come on, and you know, it would say, "Knowing is half the battle, G.I. Joe."
Yes.
And that's, we've got to get back to teaching things through in the best way for people to learn.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I think we're missing that a bit because there has to be an alternative
well,
to spraying chemicals and these things. And
you know. We're missing that. We're also having a problem with teaching the wrong things. One of the worst campaigns that ever hit the United States was the Smokey the Bear campaign. "Remember, boys and girls, only you can prevent forest fires." And I watched that on Saturday morning cartoons all the time. And the thing that bothered me about that was our southern forests relied on forest fire to keep them healthy. And that was just a negative thing that did so much damage. Here's a texter that called in. It's our semi-retired truck driver again. When he quit spraying around his yard, he noticed that the frog population has exploded. So his frogs and toads are coming back simply because he stopped spraying. And we all need to do that. Where I live on a private lane, and I make sure that the truck does not come up my private lane. I don't want them near my house with the spray truck. Of course, some of that's going to get there anyway because I'm only a few hundred yards from a city street. But I have to say, I absolutely love our city leadership, and it's not a knock against our city leadership that I'm railing on. It's a knock against the number of people out there that don't realize the damage that we're doing. Hey, guys, I'm going to be back next week filling in for Garden Mama right here on Super Talk Radio. So next Saturday morning, 8 to 10, the Birdman will be back with you right here on Super Talk Radio. Look forward to seeing you next week.
Episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned hundreds of millions of dollars in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, MAX and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused careers, jobs, and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jumpstart on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae, treasury.ms.gov.
Hey there, homeowners. Sammy the Shovel here with an important message from Mississippi 811. Internet fiber expansions are being added, making it more important than ever to know exactly where your utilities lie when digging on your property. Whether it's simple landscaping or a large project, you need to call 811 at least 3 working days before you dig. Even with laws in place, safety is in your hands. Do the right thing and call 811 every dig, every time. You dig?
Hey. A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.